Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The Warren Commission is not something people in America are generally neutral about. Even if you were born long after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, you either think the 888-page Warren Commission report was the responsible attempt by the government to move the country past a national tragedy, or you think it was a pack of lies, a fictional cover-up worthy of Hollywood, or at least director Oliver Stone.
Why was Kennedy killed?
There's a death warrant out for me, you know?
Who benefited?
The government's gonna jump all over your head, Jimbo.
Who has the power to cover it up?
To this day, I have serious doubts that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
Really?
I mean, I'm not sure if anybody else was involved. I don't go down that road with respect to the grassy knoll theory and all of that. But I have serious questions about whether they got to the bottom of Lee Harvey Oswald's time and influence from Cuba and Russia.
The seeds of doubt from the beginning of the Warren Commission investigation, cultivated by Hollywood movies and pop culture, and expressed even today by Secretary of State John Kerry in a recent interview with NBC's Tom Brokaw. Howard Willens went to work on the Warren Commission a week after Kennedy's death. He was a senior staff attorney on the commission and author of the new book, History Will Prove Us Right, which defends the findings of the commission that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman and acted alone, and that Jack Ruby, who killed Oswald 2 days later, also acted alone.
There was a great debate, as you probably know, about how to deal with the assassination, because killing the president was not a federal crime back in 1963. So the responsibility for prosecuting the assassin or alleged assassin would have been with the state of Texas and the county of Dallas. So with the possibility of Texas proceedings and congressional investigations and so forth, President Johnson changed his mind and decided there should be a presidential commission.
There was an emotional component in the sense that you were reliving an experience that was so painful for America in some of the testimony. And then there was just purely the forensics trying to get to the bottom of this thing. Was Jackie Kennedy's testimony the most painful emotionally before the commission?
Well, I think it was. And it also has become one of the areas where there was disagreement at the time within the staff as to how her testimony was handled. And I did talk to the Attorney General, Bob Kennedy, about how he wanted to handle his sister-in-law's appearance before the commission, and he wanted it to be a very small group. He did not want to compel her to re-engage over a period of time in her recollections of what actually happened. So the criticism arises from the fact that her testimony was taken by the Chief Justice and J. Lee Rankin with the Attorney General in the room and a court reporter, and it lasted for only 9 or 10 minutes. Members of the staff who had prepared extensive questioning for her were quite offended by this turn of events. And my former classmate from law school and five-term Senator Ireland Spector described her testimony as worthless. I disagree with that. And it's an area where I think the Chief Justice made a humane and reasonable decision at that time. And I really do believe that any lawyer who looks at what she had to say would have thought long and hard before embarking on dozens of detailed questions to elicit more information from her.
How important was the Zapruder film in your investigation, and how much did it get in the way in some ways of reaching the truth?
Well, it was an incredible coincidence that everyone, including the federal investigative agencies and the commission, had access to that 26 seconds of film that must now be regarded as one of the most historic short films in the history of the United States. And it was the constant viewing of that which eventually led the commission staff to come up with this proposition that it may have been a single bullet that wounded both the president and the governor, which became the single bullet theory that has been challenged and in some instances ridiculed over the decades.
Oliver Stone, the filmmaker, did he ask you to consult on his movie of all
no,
this?
No, I did not receive that honor. But I did testify in 1992 before a congressional committee shortly after Oliver Stone had testified and was greeted with the adulation and of the members of Congress who were eager to elicit from him further details about his conspiracies that featured the President of the United States, President Johnson, being part of a cover-up to conceal the real truth about the assassination. And I testified that, in my humble opinion, I thought he was a better screenmaker, a producer, than a historian. I think he was wrong then, and he continues to be wrong in every important respect now.
Why do you think Oswald did it?
Well, the absence of any clear motive is another complicating factor, and I think it has influenced people to look for a conspiracy. Because a conspiracy, whether it's the CIA or the Soviet Union or Cuban exiles, at least provides an explanation. What people don't realize who think there must have been a conspiracy here is that Oswald got his job at the Texas School Book Depository about a month before the assassination, totally by chance, and without any knowledge at that time that there would ever be a presidential motorcade. But the absence of a clear motive leaves people free to speculate on possible relationships that may have influenced him.
50 years later, do we live in a time where we actually expect things like this to happen? Expect crazy, disgruntled, angry shooters to pop off at our presidents, at celebrities, at school children, for that matter?
Yes, I do think we do. And what it prompts two thoughts. First, no one really wants to accept the frequency and commonality of these horrific events to be part of our normal life. But I'm also interested in the sense that when we do have those incidents, people do take it as either senseless or personality disorder. They do not look for a conspiracy with the intensity and conviction that they apply when they look for Oswald's motives in killing the president. So we accept it to some extent. But when presidents are concerned, I think we are committed to search more broadly for a definitive motive and a possible conspiracy.
I wonder if part of the mythology of this event is that in some metaphorical sense, this feeling of menace we have in America is Oswald still up there.
Well, I think he is, in part because of the mythology about that particular president and Camelot and all the aspirations that many of us had who lived through that decade, and then over that decade saw a series of assassinations, saw involvement in the Vietnam War, then turned to Watergate in the next decade. And I think that that series of events has led to a distrust of government officials and skepticism, apprehension, and we do live in that community today, and we have difficulty, I think, in adjusting to it.
Howard Willens, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
Howard Willens is the author of History Will Prove Us Right and a member of the Warren Commission. What do you still remember about the death of President John F. Kennedy?
This is Judy in Boston. I was only 3 years old when JFK was shot, but because of my parents' stock reactions, I vividly remember watching something that they found disturbing on the news on our old black and white TV. Oddly, years later, this dynamic repeated when I was home with my then 3-year-old son and as I watched my TV in horror on 9/11. My son still has a clear memory of this, too.
We're collecting stories of your memories from that November day back in 1963. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE with your story. We're also watching news from the Philippines. People in the typhoon-affected area still struggling to get clean water, shelter, and gasoline. If you want to help, go to thetakeaway.org, where we have a list of agencies providing aid for victims from Typhoon Haiyan. Your donations will help the relief effort. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.